Greetings, this is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio, also simulcasting on East Eddie Stargate on YouTube. We've got a great guest tonight. We have Simon Essler, and he's a full disclosure activist, healer, energy practitioner, researcher, writer, author, philosopher, father, and adept student of experience. Father is probably the highest credential there. You can learn more there than anything. He's an ordained governor. Yeah. He's ordained by the Government of Ontario as a metaphysical minister on the Bancroft Center for Awakening Spiritual Growth. As a certified life cycle celebrant, he's trained in the art of custom ceremony creation, and through Rainbow Kids Yoga, he's certified in the art of creating children's meditations. He's alumni of New York University with a Bachelor of Arts degree in theater studies. In November of 2017, he launched the QAnon think tank with an incredible team. It has grown into 14,000 member community focused on researching, filing, and disseminating the QAnon disclosures. He is the host and creator of Worlds Within, a weekly series on Edge of Wonder TV, and is a co-host of The Great Awakening .ca. He has been a speaker at consciousness and ufology events in Toronto, California, and Colorado, and will be offering a presentation and workshop in Flat Rock, North Carolina, this summer for Camp Disclosure. I'll be there too as well. So without any further ado, I'm going to bring Simon on the show. Simon, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, God, there's so many ways we could go. I'd love to get an update. I know most of my my group here is really into the latest on the QAnon. I know they haven't posted much. Have they posted anything new, or they've kind of gone silent, haven't they?
Yeah, there was some recent drops, and it was, interestingly enough, it was around the time things started going viral with Trump responding to the Q questions.
Yeah.
And there's no surprise there. You know, because Q has been asking, like, when are you going to ask the question, right? This has been a theme all along. And now suddenly the questions about Q begun to build in the media, and Trump is being forced to respond. And yeah. I mean, to me, it's so interesting watching his response.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, you know, because when we look at how hyped Q is in the media, right, there's just articles about it every day over and over again. And then Trump's response is he doesn't know much about it. But is it really reasonable to say that the president of the United States is not briefed on something that is this big of a deal, right? Like, that's too plausible at all.
Yeah. I've always felt from the very beginning he was in on it, you know, that he's probably Q plus. And then the next one down the line was probably Admiral Rogers, because they have everything. They've got all the info on everybody and everything. So it's a no brainer. And this is, you know, for people to say it's a farce or it's a hoax or whatever, right? There's too many spot on things they've said and predictions they've made. There's no way you could not accept the fact that there's somebody on a very high level that knows what's going down. That's minimal.
Baseline. Because, you know, when you think about, like, all the articles and angles that people take to try to debunk it, what I never see is, for example, someone acknowledging that on the boards, they asked Trump to confirm the Q operation by saying the following words. And then what happens? Trump goes out in public, he says the exact words that the Anons asked him to say, or he goes on Twitter and uses the exact wording they asked for. That's never included in any of these stories trying to debunk it. So my understanding of it is that if you're going to debunk Q, you kind of have to be a conspiracy theorist, because you have to acknowledge that Trump is talking to the Q community through these back channels.
Yeah, you can't miss that. It's, I mean, he makes the big Q mark, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
Who talks like that? Come on. Who walks out and makes a big Q gesture and then starts talking? I mean, it's like, okay, last time I saw somebody do that was never.
You know?
So anyway, but yeah, it's obvious. I'm curious. I know there's other intel out there too as well, but you know, in the past 3 or 4 days, two, I felt this energy going through deep, deep, heavy energy, deep sadness. You know, a lot of people are saying, I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go home. You know, they're really feeling that longing for the Pleiades or some other system or a higher civilization or something that they used to know. And the people that actually incarnate here to help with this shift are really feeling it right now. And I'm getting emails and texts just off the scale. And I've been feeling it too. And then I'm getting people really close to me texting me saying, what is going on? I woke up this morning bawling my eyes out. You know, what is going on? And you know, I have a couple of theories. I'm curious if you've been feeling the same thing and what do you feel is going on?
Yeah, I definitely had that the other day. I had to set aside time to just lay around and weep and just mourn. It was so strong. I think there's like a big mourning going on collectively in terms of like actually stepping into what we need to be doing. Because to do that, we have to let go of a lot of the things that have made us feel secure. Or, you know, for example, a lot of people might be stepping out more into their truth. They might be becoming more public with their truth. But the fallout of that might be the loss of certain relationships, right? You have a lot of heated debates going on within circles of friends and families. And so there is, I think, a mourning, a letting go of what was to a certain extent. And I've had that literally in my life. You know, I recently had my cat die, and this was like one of my best friends for so many years. And it was right when the Lionsgate portal was activating. And you know, that experience was very synchronistic for me. So since then, I've sort of been in that phase of what symbolically in my life is occurring so that I can be more of service to the collective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a big pattern there.
Yeah, that's spot on, because I've been getting the same thing, is that people are releasing, they have to release the past and the old wounds and traumas and things so they can get on with their mission. And that sometimes when getting on with their mission means that big time changes are coming, you know, in relationships, jobs, and everything else you're talking about. And I've also seen a collective, just people really sad for where things are going, especially on the dark heart side, you know, where they're trying to take us, and how people are being, you know, and I'll get in trouble for this, but they're being useful idiots. They're being used, you know, it goes back to, you know, Soros is funding all this stuff. And the guy says, I'm going to use the blacks because they're easy to manipulate to take down America. You know, in his own words, these guys are saying this stuff and these guys are being used. And luckily, a lot of them are waking up and saying, hey, wait a second, we're being, you know, we're expendable. We're just being used as puppets, you know, in a bigger agenda, you know, a much larger agenda. And, you know, does need to be some reform, you know, in the police department, things like that. That's a given. But when you look at the statistics, your odds are much better if you're a black man getting arrested and not getting shot than you are if you're a white man. If you look at the real statistics, you know, or Mexican or whatever. So anyway, you know, I was looking at all the statistics, and I'm just saying, you know, who's fueling this? Who is creating these race wars, these gender wars, and everything else? And it goes back to this same group, this same elite group, and they're funding all of it. And it's all part of a take down America plan. And at the same time, it you know, these people are being used. You know, they think they're being supported in their quest for freedom, but they're actually, you know, participating in their own enslavement and their own demise, basically.
It's a very difficult thing to observe, right? Because you're watching people who have really lost a great deal of their sovereignty. And I for me, it's been a hard realization to come to. But I think in the same way that some of these people are being turned into sort of useful idiots, they're being turned into like, messengers of something they don't actually value. And I think there's a danger for us as well in terms of like truth or communities and the mission that we have, because we can be turned into very divisive, delivery mechanisms. The deep state, having infiltrated our communities, can easily use us to create more division. And this is tough, right? Because when we want to step up and use things like civil disobedience to try to represent the truth, then if that's done in a certain way, it might end up just causing more division out in the world. So we have to be very tactical, because we're seen as an asset to the deep state, right? They want to wield our communities in a specific way, and they want to direct us in certain ways. So we have to have our discernment. And in the way that we judge others as being used, I think we need to be very careful in watching ways that we're being directed similarly.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no grander place right now, it seems like, than other than the spiritual and UFO community, where the seeds of division are being sown, and they've totally infiltrated it with planned opposition and shills and people like that that are in there. And they're not who they say they are. You know, they definitely are. You know, you see them, you know, shaking their fists at the government, and behind their back, they're taking a lot of money, and they're hanging out and going to Bohemian Grove right alongside of them. And, you know, it's, and, you know, and the ones they talk about, how, you know, they brag about their connections, you know, with the Podestas, the Clintons, the Rockefellers, all these guys. And you're going, wait a second, you know, where's the, I mean, we become a discernment impaired community that we really need to get our feet back on the ground and start using discernment and go, wait a second, you know, something isn't adding up here.
Yeah, there's never been a greater call for discernment. And especially because you have, you know, you have mainstream media producing articles saying, don't do your own research. Personal research is dangerous right now. And I mean, I've never heard a more dangerous idea in my life. To disarm the intelligence of the population in that way, I mean, that's very clear warfare, in my understanding, right? You're taking people's desire to discern, their desire to sort out what's going on, and you're trying to even mute that impulse in the population. So we need to not only be powerful in our discernment, but we have to be able to represent discernment for people on the other side who are really feeling lost, right? So for them to see, how does that process unfold? I mean, that's what I've been trying to represent, you know, in any of the debates I'm in all of this. It takes a lot of work to bring people back to the facts when they're coming from like an emotionally triggered stance. This is a very nuanced art. And I always like to look at things like nonviolent communication techniques. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be like out in the world, and I don't always do it, like it's hard to maintain. But, you know, our community's been put in a position to represent some very difficult truths right now. And it's a very volatile space to bring things into. So it's like, along with your discernment, you also need to have a level of compassionate communication so that your ideas actually get out there.
Yeah, I have a friend that likes to say, he goes, I just want to hit him in the head with the 2x4 first. You know, get their attention, and then we'll talk, you know. And there's a part of us that want to do that, but we have to withhold from that. But, you know, like having a battle of wits with a critically thinking and research impaired person is just, where do you go with that? You know, you just going, you know, I always ask them, where do you get your knowledge base from? Where do you get your information from to form your opinion? And then, you know, almost all of them will see CNN or MSNBC or some one of these, you know, like this. And you go, well, they lied about this. They lied about this. They lied about this. This is all proven. You know, you go through. So your whole foundation is based on lies. And their jaw just drops, you know, and they go, yeah. And they go, I go, well, how can you take anything they say from here on as factual or knowing that they lied all the way through, and it's like this. I think the real epidemic is CNN, you know, and these other, and people listening to it and forming their opinion on it. That's the epidemic, you know. That it's a non-research epidemic. I think it is. That's research, you know, inoculation. Basically, it's the vaccine.
I've been running into this a lot. In a lot of like debates with people, you know, who see themselves as skeptics and who see themselves as like out there trying to stop the conspiracy theorists. That's like their personal stance, right? And a lot of them, the new script that I've come into is, if you're going to debate, you can't share any sources from YouTube. You can't share anything that's remotely right wing. They have like a list, right? Of like, well, you can't share, that doesn't count as evidence because it's on YouTube. So people have become paralyzed because unless they're seeing information from the right list, they won't even discuss the evidence that's in front of them. It's a big hurdle. I've recently, I really started encountering that, where any video evidence I showed, people just say you're lost in a YouTube algorithm and you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's it. Then you're like, okay, well,
I just said, well, you're socially engineered and you can't think for yourself, you know? It's like,
yeah.
And that's and you know, what's a lot of these like Antifa kids are young, very wealthy white kids, you know, that, and they're really angry because their father wasn't there for them. They got no attention as a kid. They're kind of abandoned. And that's what their real rage is about. And they're raging against the system, and they really need to go within and deal with their own abandonment issues, their own wounds and traumas and things like that. And, you know, and it's sad because, you know, you take a look at it and just say, so what's the deal? You've never been loved, or, you know, your father wasn't there, your parents weren't there for you. And that's exactly what comes up every time. They just break down and they're really angry. And these people are, these other guys are directing that anger. They're playing on their wounds and traumas and their frustrations and anger, and they're guiding them into their end result, which is basically take down America. That's the main goal.
To understand this, like, we really need to be able to think in terms of like these operations, these cabal operations, right? Yeah. So they lined this stuff up generations ago. They knew exactly what they were doing. Have you read the Toronto Protocol?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So they state this overtly in that, right? They say that we're going to damage the youth of this specific generation while damaging the family unit. It will then lead to youths who respond in this way. I mean, they had it mapped out generation by generation, but because no one in the normal public mainstream system thinks beyond these 4-year terms of politicians or thinks beyond their own lifetime, then that kind of multi-generational programming is totally invisible to them.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they miss it. Yeah, I read that whole thing. I went, oh my God, the whole thing about how you know, we can, you know, we're going to use deception and dishonesty. We're going to bribe them. We're going to set them up, you know, and it tells all the ways they're going to blackmail, you know, and take over control. And so even means sacrificing some of our own, you know, that's still part of the plan, you know, and, you know, that's exactly where everything is gone. You know, almost everybody up there has been bribed or blackmailed, or they've taken the money to be a puppet, you know, for these other guys. And now, you know, I look at what's going on. I go, these people are making decisions that are going to affect me. They're leading our country. I go, what a recipe for disaster. It makes no sense whatsoever. But I know a lot of people that haven't been around for a while, they don't really understand. They haven't watched this unfold. So they're coming in on it, you know, with fresh eyes, and they have no idea about the whole foundation that's been laid to take it to here. They don't realize they're part of that and they're being used.
You know, that's like one of the hardest things I think we have to face, is that the way they've programmed this and the way they've laid it out, it's based in triggering people who have real trauma. So for example, with like Black Lives Matter, right?
Yeah.
You have like, there is real trauma, right? There's genuine trauma within the Black community. They're trying to sort through their trauma. They have that challenge before them. And the most insidious part about this is that their trauma is being wielded as a weapon, so that anytime we challenge that narrative, it seems like we're denying the reality of the trauma. And to sort that out for people is very complex, right? To understand that you're supportive of the trauma that exists within a community, and that you don't support this narrative because it undermines the people and their trauma, not because you're rejecting its existence.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's very interesting the way they spin this. And it's like I hang out with a lot of Native American elders, and my grandmother, great grandma, they're Cherokee, and so we're Scotch Irish Cherokee. We're kind of a mix, and you listen to these people, and a lot of the elders of every nation, doesn't matter, Black Nation, Yellow Nation, all of them, they've been around for a long time, especially the grandmothers, and they know what's going on. They see what's going on. They see both sides. You know, they see the wounds and the traumas that were inflicted, and the emotional problems and things like that, and the oppression. But they also have been around long enough to realize that those who are acting as the saviors are really the oppressors, you know, and they're seeing through what's really going on. And I've talked about that before. I just said, well, do your history, you know, look at your history, Ku Klux Klan, Democratic, you know, women's suffrage, Democratic voted against it, equal rights voted against it, you know, like they're all chummy. All your buddies are chummy with Byrd, you know, leader of the Ku Klux Klan, you know, it's just like, have you not figured this out yet? You know, have you, and these same people are the ones pushing these, this division game, the race card, you know, the gender card, everything else. These are all the same people. But I know there's people like Candace Owens, you know, she's one of my heroes. You know, that woman is just like, I don't know, she's like a machine gun of facts and just, you know, I mean, I'd almost be scared. I would never get in a debate with that woman, to put it that way. Because she would just, you know, she'd shred me. But I mean, that's who has to step over and step up and solve these problems. The people within the races need to wake up and see what's going on. And you know, everybody needs to be heard. And how can we sit down? Okay, how can we work this out? Okay, this is the past. You know, how are we going to get beyond this and live, you know, what I say is universal law, you know, just let's bring in universal law, brother, sister, love, universal peace, individual freedom and prosperity for everybody. That's the basics. Let's just lay this down. It's pretty much written in the Constitution, and let's go by it from here on out. You know, let's get rid of this whole usurped just us system and all this other stuff, and let's go back to the basics and get a council of grandmothers hooked up to a galactic council and see what we can do with this planet. You know, there's your solution right there. Implementing that, that's a different story. You know, how that would come about, I have no idea.
I think in the best way that we can, we are doing the footwork towards something like that. And And that's one of the heaviest things about, you know, the knowledge that we have, to have like a larger universal cosmic perspective, but then to also have to go into the weeds of like earth politics and sort that out. You know, for me personally, I found that sometimes to be very painful to have to work through the sort of mundane level of things and the political aspects of it, but then to know that there is a larger shift happening and that there is this larger cosmic perspective that's really important. That's really difficult to hold the space for both those things. And I think within our communities, we'll often have this divide that's between, you know, the very sort of cosmic, spiritually oriented people and then the very like nuts and bolts researchers who just want to talk about like the facts and, you know, the documents and that evidence. And we really need to bring those things together, I think, to move in that direction, because we need to broaden our appeal so that our information contains both those things. And that's something that I'm really focused on in my work, is trying to bridge the metaphysical and the physical and to be able to talk about them together in an integrated way, I think is where we need to be going, so that it's no longer, you know, only love and light or only like released documents or leaked documents, and really like, how do they actually connect? Because higher human consciousness is really the through line here.
Yeah. I love that saying, you know, man with head in clouds, stumble and ditch, you know. And and I had this woman, I love what she said. She said, spiritual people are of no earthly good, you know, because their feet aren't on the ground. They're not doing the work. You know, the higher dimensions are fine. You know, they're okay. It's here that the work needs to be done. You know, get your feet on the ground. And I've always felt that way. And the more grounded you are, the more spiritual energy you can bring in too, which is a paradox. Even ascension, you know, that everybody's teaching these things. You got to leave. You got to get out of here. You got to get into this dimension, that dimension, everything else. And I said, well, you got to bring the higher dimensions here. That's how you ascend. You got to bring them into your physical body, every cell of your body. And then your body starts vibrating and then you ascend. You don't ascend by leaving and judging things. You have to master judgment and bring the energy here, you know, into every cell of your body. But you know, you see all these programs out there and they're missing a point, you know, that the creator is omnipresent in all creation. Creation is just as holy as the creator. And there's this another big division game that's going on.
Yeah, it's true. I found it's really brought me forward leaps and bounds to get more focused on bringing that consciousness into my physical body. And really, I've been focusing on this a lot on my series on Edge of Wonder, is the divine nature of our anatomy and the way that our anatomy is designed to receive higher consciousness, to move into higher vibrations, you know, the way that our eyes are designed, the way our ears are designed, and our heart, and how they actually have anatomical functions that direct us towards ascension. We need the organs of our body to ascend. They're part of this, you know? And that's a, you know, that's a, it's a strange truth to come to, because really the desire for escapism is really strong in a lot of spiritual communities, like you said, right? Yeah. This idea of escapism is powerful, partially because I think we're on earth during a very difficult time. It can be really heavy. It can be really painful. And sometimes you just want to experience those higher states of consciousness that feel lighter and feel more beautiful. But I think the other side of it is that, you know, we're a community that has been infiltrated for a long time. And I think in a lot of the spiritual teachings that have been undermined, or when you trace it back, it might have roots in the CIA and, yeah, you know, the extent to which the New Age community was co-opted. I think a lot of what they did was implant, basically, you know, that idea of spirituality as a reward system, higher consciousness as a reward system, that if you're experiencing higher consciousness, well, then you're being rewarded and you can relax, you know, and people get caught in that. They have their first experience of something deeper, of something larger, and their goal then becomes chasing that experience more and more, instead of bringing it into their service, bringing it into the mundane, bringing it into their friendships and their family relationships. And that's the challenge. So when you experience higher consciousness, all you're being shown is what you need to bring to earth, not that state you need to chase after that experience is done.
Yeah. Yeah. I say they get in denial basically. And then they go into, they use a separation. I'm trying to think how to say this, but I've just watched this pattern go, where they, you know, go into denial, and then they deny their own shadow side. And the collective consciousness has a shadow side. Every aspect, every institution has a shadow side. And we have to realize that we can't ignore that and be in denial of that, you know, on every level. And that's what's happening. The shadow side's being revealed right now everywhere. And people are getting so disheartened by it, because they're going, this is out of my hands. And it really is out of your hands, but there's a higher force that has a good hand on all of this, you know, that you got to trust in. Trust in the plan, in the multidimensional plan, you know. I've seen that. And a lot of times in the spiritual community, it'll go from people will come and they've got their wounds and traumas. They get through some of them. They get a few spiritual tools. And then unfortunately, it goes into spiritual ego. And then it goes into narcissism. And then you can't help anymore. You just have to let it crash. You have to let it hit that wall. And after they hit the wall, then they go to the self-mastery, you know. That, but you can skip all that by staying humble, you know, all the other stuff.
I'm seeing this talked about a lot lately, is really the divide between the narcissist and the empath.
Yeah.
And the extent to which that's playing out. And that dichotomy, I think, is very true to where we're at. And really, like, within us too, right? Each of us is struggling with that part of us that has those narcissistic tendencies, and that part of us that wants to move into sort of the intuitive, empathic way of living. And that's what we're sorting out within us as well. And, you know, I've recently had personal experiences with this, where just, you know, realizing that my ability to discern a narcissist from someone who is truly of service and truly tuned in, was really not what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And I had like a whole bunch of experiences that have arisen lately in my life where, you know, I've had to look back and reconcile all those times where I was sure of myself. I was sure of my intuition. I was sure of my spiritual understandings. And now I look back and it's like, you know, I bought into some bullshit back, yeah, you know, years ago in my life. And what is important now is getting a really subtle, nuanced idea of how that happened. What were the psychological factors at play? How did I, you know, how did I experience this as a moment of growth? Because, you know, I did, but then I go back and realize that the growth had nothing to do with my interpretation of the situation. And I think a lot of people are going through experiences like that now, right? Like, how do we apply discernment to a time when there's so much unknown, right? And the little bit that we get, it's hard. It's really challenging.
Well, and then everything we've been told, you know, it's like, you know, I've been in this game quite a long time in the UFO community, and I'm going, and I thought, you know, it's kind of naive when I went in there. I go, wow, you know, we're having contacts. We're having masters appear here. We're getting photographs of them, light ships, one-third treetop level, interacting with the people. We go power up. They go boom. They power up, respond, have done that redundantly on so many shows. And then all of a sudden, so I was kind of naive, and I come traipsing into the UFO field, and I go, holy crap, these guys don't want this. They don't want contact. They don't want to know anything about the higher dimensional aspects of this. They want to keep it nuts and bolts, or they want to keep it in the past, or they want to keep the sensationalism going, you know, and keep the questions unanswered. And it was a learning process. And I, after I went sifting through, I only found a handful of people that were truly heart-centered, truly high degree of integrity, and doing the research and really getting the information out. And it's sad, you know, that, and I found there's so many people were in it just for the fame and the money and the notoriety or whatever else, you know, but you go, where's that quest for truth, you know, where's that service, you know, part, you know, it's gone, you know, it's, and I kind of stepped out of it. Basically, I realized right now is that I will go to smaller events where the people are heart centered, and I feel they're the bigger events I've kind of stepped away from, and then we're going to set up our own system of getting the information out, which is, we're setting up our own, we have our own YouTube channel, but we're going to have our own TV channel, everything. We're going to bring people that are really for real, that are legit, you know, on the show, that have a message that's truly of service. And I just found out I couldn't work within the system the way it is now.
You know, that's really good news. I'm so glad to hear you guys are doing that, because it's such an important time to be taking more control of the message, or more control of the container so that the message can be offered. You know, I think in terms of what you're talking about, like people that, you know, they come forward claiming the desire to experience the truth, and then they go into denial or they reject what's occurring. And, you know, this is a really big challenge that we're all up against in terms of, you know, I think you have to be ready for the truth to destroy the parts of you that are not of service.
Yeah.
And it's freaky. And this is what I've noticed, is that truths have come forward in my personal life, and I have had to let them destroy these parts of myself that I didn't realize were causing such problems. And there's a vulnerability to that, that I think a lot of people turn away from. So if they go to an event where a real UFO arrives, then that part of them gets pressed upon. And so the question gets asked to them, will you let this part of yourself be destroyed so you can move forward? And, you know, I sympathize when people hit that point and have to turn around because it's not their path.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's really hard to see.
Yeah, they have a huge investment. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, they have their PhDs and their everything else, and they consider themselves experts, you know, on UFOs and things like that. And I said, well, do they teach UFO in college? They go, no. And I said, well, they actually teach you they don't exist, you know, so where does your expertise come from? And it, you know, it's like, it, you know, you have to ask those questions. And, you know, I filmed a ship landing on Mount Adams. It morphs into four different ships. Then it takes off and leaves, and a jet chases it. You have the whole thing on film. And so we hand it over to James Todd at the OMSI Planetarium, right? And we show it to him with an ABC news guy right there. We're looking at it. And then he interviews the guy, and the guy goes, oh, that's nothing more than the space station. They always, and that's their classic. Oh, they're seeing the space station. I go, well, that space station just landed. It morphed into four, went back, took off, and a jet chased it. And you're telling me that space station can do that? I mean, the space station or the shuttle, you know? give me a freaking break. There's no landing pad on Mount Adams, you know, for a space shuttle. It's just like, and people just want an answer. They want an answer from the expert. And they go, and if they don't ask, they go, well, why is this guy an expert? You know, he's not an expert in anything. He's not taught in school. And it's not taught in his school, you know, so it's a controlled narrative. It's a controlled curriculum, you know, so.
When you look back to how, you know, how William Tompkins said, he had that statement about how the whole education system right up to university is totally controlled and it's all misinformation, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a huge statement. It's a really large statement to make that a lot of people would be like, that is absolutely ridiculous. So recently I started, I'm listening to this audio book called Range. And it's really, really interesting. And it actually started to answer that question for me of like, okay, the scope of what William Tompkins is referring to is huge. How can we even talk about that? And in this book, he describes range, which is basically when someone has a wide range of life experiences. So let's say they have 6 different failed careers. And then by the time they're 40, they hit their stride and they're actually incredible at their job because they failed 6 careers first. And that having a range of experiences actually makes someone a better expert in a particular field than mm-hmm. someone specializing in that field from when they were a child. And he talks about the science of this, how there's something called, I think it's cognitive narrowing, that literally the more specialized someone becomes, they've actually measured this, they lose other forms of intelligence. So other forms of intelligence start to reduce as they become greater specialists. Whereas the people that have the range of experiences and then arrive in that career later on after doing extremely different things are better experts. And this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Across the whole education system, all professional fields, it's all this cognitive narrowing instead of people that have range and can actually give a larger scope of what's going on.
Yeah, and then they compartmentalize that, and that's how they keep everything a secret. Nobody knows the big picture on what's being done. Everybody has just a little compartment, you know, that they work in. And yep. by doing so, again, the real wisdom is not allowed in, you know, and any kind of a heart wisdom too is pushed out of there. Cause they don't know, you know, if you're building this little trigger system and then you find out it goes to a neutron mini nuke, you know, and you probably go, whoa, wait a second. I don't think I want to build this. You know, I don't want to put my name on this, or they have the karma attached to this device, you know? Yep. And, but you don't even know. All you know is you're building this thing and this is how it's made. And that's all you know. You don't even know what it goes into or how it's going to be used or anything else.
This is a really important tactic that they've used. And, you know, I think the way that they do that with technology is analogous to the way they've done it to people, right? It's the same track. It's the same form of compartmentalization, really. But this is actually, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. This is what's so powerful and important, literally, about conspiracy theorists. Because our tendency is to take information from very different fields and actually draw connections. To take these larger things that seem disparate, that seem compartmentalized, but when we study them, we start to develop larger webs of meaning. So literally, a quality of the conspiracy theorist is a direct response to the compartmentalization of our social engineering. So I actually think that, you know, if you had access to the history of awakening planets, let's say in this galaxy, and you went back and you looked at like, what is one of the first things that happens on a planet that's about to awaken? I bet you on a bunch of them, the first thing that happens is there's a whole bunch of conspiracy theorists.
Oh yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. Somebody questioning. You know, I wrote a book along, well, Reunion with Swords, and I had a short story in there about the mud people. And these people would go, and this one priest went, and he put mud on his legs every morning, you know, and he did his prayers, and he put mud on his legs and then left. And so everybody was doing this ritual, you know, this ritual. And there's all these little parasites that would jump and bite you, you know? And so that's why he put mud on his legs. It had nothing to do with anything else. Right. And so they were all doing these prayers and putting the sacred mud on their legs. And so half of their whole program was just functional. It wasn't spiritual. It wasn't religion. It was to deal with the parasites on the planet. And so if you didn't have the mud on your legs, you know, you're an outsider and you're a heathen, you know, you're this and that, you know, if you wore some boots or something, you know, you know, and, it's really funny that you look at how, you know, if you look at all the base religions and you take them back to their origins, they all go back to the stars and they go back to basically the gods, whatever you want to call them, ancient Lyrians or Anunnaki. Everybody has a different name for them, but, and some were benevolent and some were real a-holes, basically, you know, some destroyed village after village and beat babies' heads on rocks. And it unbelievable the stuff that was done in the name of God. And when you read the Old Testament, well, and then you have this all loving, all forgiving God. You're going, wait a second, who's this guy? You know, and they talk about Jesus bringing in a new covenant, you know, of this all loving, all forgiving God. But what about the old guy? Who was that? You know?
And, yeah.
Yeah. And they don't know their ancient history. If they knew their ancient history, they would realize that there's been a series of gods that have been here, some extremely advanced beings, and some were very benevolent and some were tyrants. Some were evolved tyrants.
You know, we've almost always given away our power. As a species, we have a serious problem with this. And I think it's one of the big things we're facing in this great awakening. This is one of the major things. We have this tendency. Even if someone is a good teacher, is a true teacher, we still shouldn't be giving our power away to that person or that being, right? And I think we're all clearing this. We're all clearing this. I think in the spiritual communities, the expression of it is sort of that guru programming of that idea of needing someone, right? And then, you know, that is our version of people needing the COVID narrative to tell them how to live, needing the government to tell them that they're afraid or that they should be scared. You know, those people that are really caught in that narrative, you know, that's their own version of giving their power away. So as we practice not doing that as a smaller community, I think that's like a microcosm and we're uplifting everyone who's struggling with that on different levels.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's almost like it's in our DNA, basically, to worship outside of ourselves. And sometimes I think they programmed that in there in the ancient times. But, you know, you see a being, you know, come out of the heavens, you know, on a shiny disc, you know, and it has bronze feet like cows and fire and brimstone coming out from underneath it, you know, and it lands and sounds like 1,000 rushing rivers. You know, that's a pretty extreme technology coming down. And you're automatically going to worship that guy as a god. You know, until they order their men with their shattering weapons to destroy all the men, women, and children of Israel, then you kind of go, wait a second. This may not be a god, you know, it might be somebody else, you know. So we have all these historical accounts of that, and you're just going, wait a second, you know, we really need to, you know, go in the ancient, Vedic, you know, descriptions and things like that. They talk about the gods and their ships, and some are physical, some are pure energy, some are light ships, and some are Merkabas, and they have their armaments and their technology. It's all described in there, you know, and so we need to go back, you know, not just 6,000 years, but let's go back 6 million years, basically, and then we'll have a true grasp of the history of Earth.
Yeah, you know, the extraterrestrial influence has always had this major power to influence us in this way. And so you have all the examples you're talking about historically where it's like, you know, these beings come and of course you want to attribute spiritual power or advancement to that. But now it's interesting how things have kind of flipped where we have been indoctrinated to be afraid of the ET phenomenon because it has that power to break the veil down, to shatter the illusion. And so now, you know, we're looking at this interesting challenge of trying to bring forward disclosure and trying to promote peaceful contact, and yet seeing in ourselves the remaining programming that has fears and that has, you know, ideas that there's danger there. And that was really like, you know, I had a contact experience that was right along these lines, and it really showed me what programming existed within me in those realms, you know, and that's really, I think it exists more in this community than people even realize.
So that was interesting. Just got totally off the air. Yeah, that happens every time that we start talking about the ancient history and the real history of Earth. And anytime we talk about the origins of religions and the bearded gods and things like that, bam, knocked right off the air, out of the park every time. So somebody's got their finger on the switch. I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's AI or some green little reptilian up there or who, but somebody likes to pull the plug on us every time we go there.
Oh, I guess it means we should go there.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. See, how can I go even deeper into that?
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I was going to tell a story about this because, you know, I had an experience that helped sort of awaken me to some of the work I need to do. Because I've had, I'm an experiencer. I've had, different extraterrestrial experiences all throughout my life. And of course, you know, I seek to make more intimate forms of contact, right? That's like a life goal for me, as it is for many in this community. Uh-huh. So I had an experience where I was in bed. I had just put my children down and I was laying in bed, and suddenly I felt my whole body fill with light and energy, and I could feel these light beings coming into the room. And so they entered the space and I felt the whole space shift and my whole body started like humming and vibrating. And then soon, about a couple of minutes or maybe 30 seconds into it, I get pulled out of my body and I can hear these beings communicating with me through feelings. Really, it wasn't really words, but through feelings. Yeah. Uh-huh. And what they did was they made physical contact with my body while I was outside my body. And then they showed me intricately all the physiological processes of fear that started being triggered. And they showed me the actual programming that was still in my body that would unfold if they actually tried to make physical contact right now. So they wanted me to, and when this happened, I was fully aware of my body sort of within my body. And also I was outside of it, right? So I had that dual awareness. And I was really able to see I can feel my adrenal glands. I can feel my heart rate increase. And as someone who's been involved in ufology and all this work for years, you know, it was a bit of a rude awakening that I still haven't really dealt with the programming that's like deep in my heart that would disturb a contact experience like that. And I think there's lots of work to do there. And it shows me how carefully they have tried to implant fear-based stories into people that will disturb and destroy potential moments of peaceful contact.
Yeah, I agree 100% because I've had that same experience. And what I found out having a couple near-death experiences, you know, once you conquer the fear of death, everything else is kind of minuscule. And you have to be at that point where you go, okay, if this kills me, so what? You know, and then you can have the contact. But as long as you have that fear and you have that programming and everything else, it's up to us to lose that fear, to heal the wounds and traumas and all the social engineering programming and rise to the occasion. It's not their job to come and fix all that for us, but they'll help us along the way, you know, if we make that decision.
Well, and I think if we enter contact with an agenda and with motive, that's also something that's going to disturb it, right? There needs to be a certain amount of stillness and silence that's open to the experience and that doesn't carry an agenda or a motive, you know, because not only that will that disturb the kind of contact that's being made, but how can you have discernment about whether you're actually making peaceful contact if you're caught up in your own agenda, if you're working from that spiritual ego and looking to be a special person, you know, then you're not going to be able to discern what's going on. So when we're free of motive and free of an agenda, to me, that's a step in the right direction away from the programming, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. I've seen that over and over again. A lot of people go, you know, the government's lying to us, you know? And I said, well, a lot of them don't know. They haven't risen to the occasion. They don't have any knowledge at all about these higher dimensional beings. Because they haven't done their work, you know, their spiritual work. And these are very spiritually and technologically advanced beings. And so a lot of them, they're not really lying to you because there's no purposeful good in contacting them. So they haven't had a contact. But a lot of them do know. I mean, they know they're out there, but they have no firsthand experience. And that's about all they know is there's something out there. And which brings us to this, you know, I see, you know, they have this tic-tac thing, you know, with a fuzzy cam, you know, on it, and two military guys saying, oh, look, here's disclosure. And they get all their name guys. Here it is. This is what we all been waiting for. And I'm going, for 30 years with the $200 Sony camcorder, you know, 34 years now, I've outgunned NASA, all these people, with a $200 Sony. And I've got better footage than that. And I have these things, every color, size, and shape, morphing, and, you know, one-third treetop level flying by, you know, right overhead, whiting the camera out, everything else. And, you know, I see this stuff and I go, and you guys are settling for a Tic Tac and you don't really believe the narrative's controlled. You know, a fuzzy Tic Tac is what you guys are all hyping over right now. And that is the controlled narrative right there.
Hands down. And that shows you that it's never been about the evidence. It's all been about mind control, because there's been waves of evidence over decades of ufology building and building as a research focus, as a community. It's never been about the evidence. So even the narrative that where's your evidence is, I mean, that's just a bogus story to begin with. You know, we've had evidence forever. But I think one of the ways they do this, and it's very subtle, is they coerce everyone into thinking about it only from one form of investigation. So if you only look at it from like a forensic scientific investigation, then that's going to warp your lens, right? Because that, like, that gets people into like an endless sort of labyrinth of like nuances about the scientific details. But if you looked at this from a legal perspective and you were trying to prove the validity of something in a court of law, then the evidence we have would be overwhelming. The case would be easy. It'd be simple. So, you know, people need to frame it differently about the nature of the investigation and what it really means.
Yeah. I mean, we've had ABC, all the majors, Fox News have come out here, even Jay Leno sent a crew out here. The other people, Robbie Williams, the pop star, you know, came out here and they had a big crew out. And every time we told them exactly when Paranormal Stays, another one, we told them exactly when and where the ships would appear. Have your cameras rolling. The ships came right on time, exactly when and where we said they would appear. They got it on film with multiple witnesses, and we've done this redundantly. So at what point do you have to say, okay, there's contact happening here. Minimum telepathic contact, but the ships are doing exactly what they say they're going to do. But you don't hear it. You know, that is so threatening to the UFO community that somebody is actually having contact and can prove it. That is, and there are quite a few people in the UFO community that are trying to get into it, but they're being censored. You know, Peter Slattery is one of them. He's got the best contacts. He's got beings. I was there at his house. He's got beings appearing in his living room, you know, Palladians and things like that. Photographs of it, multiple witnesses. John Vivanco, remote viewer, we're ancient aliens came up to the ranch and we go, at this time, there's going to be a ship. It's going to be in the north. Have your cameras ready and everything. They didn't even film it. They didn't even prepare for it, you know? And what's funny, they came up to my ranch and edited me out of the whole episode. And all that's in there is my hand.
Oh.
And I gave them all the information about the ancient history, everything of UFOs, you know, how they've interacted with us as civilization, everything. And they cut all that out, and all they went for the sensationalism, and all I had was my hand. And so if that's not a controlled narrative, you know, people, you're being duped. Because these guys are not here to bring out the truth. They're here to keep the narrative, the controlled narrative going. Keep it in the past, ancient, you know, and keep it far off in the distance. And let's not go into who's on the ships. What are their cultures like? What's their technology like? Can they cure disease? Can they help us? You know, none of that. You can't have any of that. You know, do they have free energy? Of course they do. You know, all that is being censored. Out of the mix. And until people realize that, they got to realize, you know, they're not going to get the truth. They're not to get the real information.
You know, those are the situations that I know for me, they bring up this sort of desire to just leave the unawakened behind and just kind of move forward.
Yeah.
Like the struggle of having to, like, you know, bring people from that narrative that's 50 years old up to what's going on and to, like, keep pulling them back. And when we can't even ask the right questions while we're being forced into that limited debate.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know I have this feeling often where it's like, okay, well, those of us that know what's going on, should we just go ahead and like start new society? Like, you know, you want to just keep going forward.
That's what I did. Really. That's why I have the ranch here. I started my own system. Yeah. I got so tired of being censored and shut out that I said, you know, I'm going to create my own conferences, my own space, and bring the people of integrity with open minds and, you know, loving hearts and pure intent. Those are the people I'm going to bring together and really get this information out. I just got the cue from Robert. He says, we're hitting the end of the hour, but I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been a great interview. We'll definitely have you on again. And, but is there anything you want to talk about as far as, I know you have events coming up and ways that people can get in contact with you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I have a weekly TV series on edgeofwonder.tv. It's called Worlds Within. I actually took this week off because I'm so busy with an upcoming conference, which I'll speak to in a second. Yeah. But Worlds Within is really, it's a dive into understanding the metaphysical underpinning of everything that we're being shown right now. So I really focus on what is the spiritual potential of suppressed information. So if you look at, like, you know, when you find out what the government's been doing in this Black Ops program, well, how does that translate to clarity and spiritual upliftment? How can it be turned into that sort of, how can you alchemize it, basically?
Yeah.
So my first season is about the metaphysics of warfare, where I go through, like, what the spiritual potential of war is for humanity, what it's been throughout history, and how we can, you know, learn from this lesson of perpetually being at war through our entire history. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's something there. And now I'm in season two, which is about metaphysical activism. And that's basically like having as much inner awareness as you do outer awareness. So when you're in the world, when you're interacting, if you're being an activist for the truth, or if you're just at your day job, that your inner awareness remains balanced and that you're not too pulled out into the world. So metaphysical activism is really a calling to balance that out so that we live with the depth of inner awareness that is required of us during these times. And so that's actually going to be, of course, part of my focus at Camp Disclosure coming up next week. So I'm going to be diving into metaphysical activism and the birth of free will on Earth. And I really feel like that's a big part of what we're doing right now, is where free will has been sort of co-opted for a long time. It's been, our own free will has been used against us. And so I feel we're moving into a time where we're finally stepping into the conscious application of free will in ways that have not happened for a long time. And I'm going to be speaking to the ways that we can come into that as a collective and as individuals, and some of the practices and information that really tie that picture together. Yeah, I'm really excited. I can't wait to see you next week as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you too. Yeah, well, you sure make my life easier. I'm sure glad you're out there and bringing all this information in. You know, it's I love meeting people of like mind out there and on the forefront, and keep up the great work. And I'm sure we'll see you at Camp Disclosure.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And all if right. anyone wants to get, oh, yes, let's say this really quick. Live stream tickets are $44.
Wow.
This is for 4 days. This is a 4-day conference for $44. So I really encourage people to jump on that, because most conferences are way, way more than that. We're going to have a really exciting experience with the live stream for people to jump into. So campdisclosure.com if people want to check it out.
Awesome.
Oh, and they can find me on Facebook at Simon Essler 1111.
Great. And we got Robert, Robert here that is going to be doing the live streaming. He's our producer here on the show. So kudos.
Right
to
on.
And so we'll all see you there. But anyway, we've got to sign off, unfortunately. It's James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and also the ESETI Stargate on YouTube. Tune in, and we'll see you soon. Good night.